Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
This episode of Silent Giants is brought to you by Allie. Allie, powered by Verizon locations, are developed by Verizon, the world's leading technology company, in collaboration with Allie, a membership-only community workspace for creators. Each location is a community curated powered by the emerging technologies and thought leadership of Verizon. With Allie, Verizon is bridging the gap between startup and corporation by helping the community workspace build next-level ecosystems for entrepreneurs.
And now, on to my interview with Mel D. Cole.
I wake up the next day. I believe that might have been Friday. Saturday, Questlove calls me. I tell him what happened. He's like, oh, man, I knew Diddy didn't want to seem like the bad guy. He wants to know if he could have your phone number. He wants to give you a call and apologize. I was like, what?
Yeah, check it out. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Everybody tuning in, you invited. No matter what mood you in, get excited. Everybody love the music. Let me tell you how they do it. Whether writer or an agent, let me tell you how they made it. You are now talking to a silent giant. Wanna walk in their shoes, silent giants. Wanna study they move, silent giants. Wanna know what they do, silent giants. Silent giants, y'all.
Welcome to the Silent Giants Podcast, a podcast that highlights the superstars behind the scenes of popular culture. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Silent Giants Podcast to keep up with the latest news about the show. To keep up with my life, music, and more, be sure to follow me as well at Corey Cambridge. This week's Silent Giant is New York City photographer Mel D. Cole. Mel is one of New York's top photographers and has built a solid resume for himself alongside Trey Songz and The Roots as their personal photographer. In this episode, I sit down with Mel to chat about his early life in Syracuse, how he got into photography, lessons he's learned along the way. He shares amazing stories about shooting Diddy's infamous White Party, meeting Sade and Drake in London's O2 Arena, and a whole lot more. So, without further ado, let me introduce you to the photographer, my friend, the silent giant, Mel D. Cole.
What's up, Mel? What's popping, dog?
I'm good. How are you?
Dude, I can't complain, man. You're a smooth cat. I'm good. How are you?
I'm chill.
Late night with Mel D. Cole.
1-2-1-2. It's like, hello, everybody.
On a rainy night in October.
Right.
Wait, so you said you've been to VA. We're talking about Virginia. You've been to Richmond, my hometown.
Yeah, I've been there a few times.
Okay. Uh-huh. A few times.
Huh?
That's more than most.
Petersburg, I've spent Thanksgiving at Trey's house down there, 2017.
His mother, April's super nice.
Yeah, April's amazing.
Yeah. When I was a little kid, I was like a junior in high school.
Mm.
There was a story where I was bussing tables at a restaurant, Ruth's Chris in Richmond.
Mm.
And none of the kids, because Trey had just come out, so none of the kids knew who he was. But okay. I did, because he was like, his shit was all over BET at the time.
Right.
So I was like, yo. But he wasn't in my section.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, yo, look, let me bust this table. Let me bust this table down, and then you can take the money. You know, he's like, okay, cool, whatever.
Right.
But it was him and his mom.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I was like, yo, man, like I rap. He was like, yo, like, let me hear your music. Give me a CD.
Yeah.
And then I gave it to him. And then, like, I ran into him again at Virginia State a couple years after that, because I went there my freshman year. Cool dude,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Trey's the man. We're going on tour. Well, he's going on tour, and I'm going with him, rather. I fly out to LA on the 29th of this month. And then we go to New Zealand, and there's 4 or 5 dates in New Zealand.
Wow.
And then we fly over to Australia, and there's like 5 or 6 dates in Australia.
Sounds like a terrible time.
Right.
Terrible life, bro.
It's horrible.
So do you know Amadeus?
Yeah.
It's my guy. I had him on the show way back.
Yeah. I just saw him at MetLife Stadium at this event that Odell Beckham Jr.'s mom was hosting along with, I feel bad that I'm drawing a blank.
Editing, don't worry about it.
Starter. Yeah, why am I drawing a blank? Yeah, I don't know why. But linebacker, amazing guy. Run Starter, the brand now.
Well, dude, it's a pleasure having you here, man.
Yeah,
where are you from?
Shit, I'm originally from Syracuse, New York.
Okay. Are you is it an Orangeman?
Yeah, well, they're the Orange now.
They used to be the Orangeman?
Used to be the Orange.
Oh, I guess because of Title IX. Or
shit, I guess.
Okay.
Something happened and they wanted to make everything equal because they were calling the orange women So they just said, fuck all that shit. Let's be gender neutral and we're just becoming the Orange.
Did you ever want to go to Syracuse?
No, I didn't.
Why?
Because it's fucking down the street from my house.
That means great school.
Literally. Yeah, it's a great school, but I wanted to get away from Syracuse. I didn't want to stay in Syracuse.
Okay.
Because I grew up in, you know, just kind of a shitty neighborhood, and I went to 3 different high schools. I went to a bunch of elementary schools. I'm a high school dropout, and staying in Syracuse necessarily wasn't, you know, going to be a great thing for me. I wouldn't be sitting here with you on this here podcast if I were to stay in Syracuse.
Was it a bad area at the time, or?
I mean, shit, it wasn't so bad, but you can get into bad shit.
Okay.
You can do bad things, and I hung around bad, not bad people, but people making bad decisions.
Okay.
And a lot of people that I hung around made a lot of bad decisions. They spent a lot of time in prison. I don't have any friends that have not done any significant time. Let me tell you, I don't have any friends that didn't do any significant time in their life. I have friends that have done 20 years, 13 years, 10, did time in juvie and all that shit. And I kind of started to look at that when I was in high school and go, you know what? I got to get the fuck out of here. I got to change my life, you know, to make it better.
What caused that change?
What caused the change is that I was 2 grades back. And everybody was graduating already. And I was looking at myself. I was like, yo, I got to get the fuck out of here. Because I feel like I'm old. And I was looking at certain people. And there was a program, I believe. It's kind of like, I guess it was night school-ish or whatever. But it was like a lot of older people that were having education problems. And they were going to these classes. And I was like, I do not want to be one of these people. So I at my 3rd high school, I met a couple of people that were just doing different shit than I was used to doing. And to be blunt and to be very frank, there were these guys, the brothers, Jason and Justin Cameron, and they were mixed white and black, but they hung out on the white side of the town, you know, doing quote unquote white shit. Going to fucking field parties and kegs and watching Friends and sneaking into white bars and smoking weed out of fucking bongs and shit like that. And I was just like, oh, wow.
Right, yeah.
this happens in this town? Like, I had fucking no idea. And it just opened my eyes. And I was like, wow, this is something that I could have been doing instead of doing the same old bullshit with my friends. I'm interested in this life. I'm interested in learning about different cultures and doing different shit. And that kind of sparked it. I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. You know, in college, I can do all of that. I can hang out with every fucking body, white, black, Asian, whatever it is. I can do that in college. And I can hopefully translate that into real life and learn, you know, make it a learning experience and make it, you know, my life now. And that's what I did.
A pivotal moment in most people's lives is a moment of exposure.
Right.
And I think that's the difference between a lot of folks who make it and don't make it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because they're bad people. It's because they don't know what's on the other side.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they're not exposed to it to see what success looks like or a different life looks like or what college could be like.
Mm-hmm.
So did you have aspirations from college, from being around that new, you know, demographic of people?
Yeah. Totally. It just, because these people like so many people that I remember around there, you know, they were had aspirations of going to college, the big schools, and you know, it was just different, a whole different culture, and they were raised differently, and they were programmed to just be different from all the people that I knew. Like, we were programmed, you know, to just make it, just to survive. And these people weren't just living to survive. They were living to fucking
thrive
and thrive, you know, to really be about it. And I just took inspiration from that and applied it to my own, you know, my own life. And I remember talking to my dad. My dad would tell me, he's like, yo, man, like, you got to get your shit together, too. And that was another thing that really sparked, you know, a fire in my ass. And I said, you know what, Dad, you're right. All this fucking up I've been doing and all the putting you through the ringer, I'm going to get my shit together. And I made a plan, and I joined this. Another thing, there was this program called the Liberty Partnership Program, LPP. And it was kind of like a counseling tutor kind of deal at school. And they told me, it was like, hey, you can drop out of high school right now because your graduating class already graduated where you're supposed to be. You can get your GED and still go to school. And I looked at them, go to college. I was like, get the fuck out of here. I was like, what? And she was like, yeah, you're smart enough to do it. Why don't you just do it now? Drop out. You take the test. And you go apply for college at the same damn time and be in school with everybody else. And that's what the fuck I did. I took the GED. I got accepted to college before I even got my GED results back.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is a community school. You know, they just, and I put down that I had it. I got the GED. I didn't know I was getting it. But I was like, I'm getting it. And I got it. And I was off to school.
And
that was it.
And what did college teach you? What did you major in school?
Liberal arts. At first, my associate's is in liberal arts. And then when I got to Stony Brook, I didn't know what I wanted to do at the time. I thought something in maybe film or whatever, but like I didn't know how to achieve that. But I ended up getting a degree in cinema and cultural studies and a minor in African American studies.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Are your parents creatives?
My father's a DJ, okay. And my mom, I wouldn't call her a creative, no, but my dad's a DJ. I wouldn't necessarily call him a creative either, you know, so.
Oh, you wouldn't call him a creative?
Not really, no. I mean, I guess DJing, I consider some and I consider a lot of DJs artists, but I wouldn't necessarily consider my father artist. He's more of a traditional, like, he can mix, he can do all of that stuff, but he uses more of his voice, you know, like he has a radio voice. He could do that kind of shit.
He should have a podcast.
Yeah, he could have a podcast, but and he DJs still. He's 65. He DJs at a Elks Lodge.
Okay.
He has a residency.
Is he in Syracuse?
Yeah.
Okay.
Every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, he DJs there. He owned a record shop as well for about 25 years. And growing up, I always thought that was what I was going to do. I was going to take over the business from him. That didn't happen. The record shop closed. Internet killed all of that shit. And also my father not being the greatest businessman either kind of destroyed that whole dream. So, yeah.
Do you collect vinyl to this day?
No, I don't. I used to when I had the record shop. I had shit. I was trying to, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a DJ, but I DJed back in the day.
Okay.
A little bit. And that was from him because he had all the equipment and all that stuff. So I was just, and I had all the records in the world that I wanted to, that I could use. So, yeah, I have a couple of mixtapes too that I still have at home.
Oh, you got to re-release some joints,
and I have some raps on them too that are horrible.
So, where did photography come into play? As far as you mentioned earlier in the conversation about being at the Common Show, but was there any interest at all in photography before that?
No,
not at all.
No. I took a photography class in college and hated it. Like, I was just too impatient. I didn't get it. I was like, nah, no. I wasn't even thinking about, like, art was so far removed from my circumference that me being an artist photographer was not a fucking thought at all. Like, it just kind of, I grew into it per se. Like, I went after it. It didn't come to me at all. You know, I bought the camera, and then I was like, I surrounded myself with creative types and just creatives in general. And that's when my creativity started to pour out, as, you know, I was inspired by my surroundings, by the people, by my friends, and by artists that turned into my peers, and so on and so forth.
Who are some of the inspirations early on for you in the world of photography?
In the world of photography, no one. Because I didn't know any photographers.
Wow.
I didn't know anyone.
So, seriously,
I knew zero photographers when I first started. Like, no one. And then I would start hearing people's names, like, oh, your work kind of like my street stuff or whatever, or taking the snaps with like black and white. Oh, your stuff kind of looks like Ricky Powell. Do you know Ricky Powell? No, who the fuck is that? I've never heard of this man in my life. Oh, you should meet Ricky. He's always around. Okay, who's Ricky? Meet him, and then I'm like, this motherfucker is crazy. And I've seen this Run DMC shit. I've seen this. I was like, oh, wow, okay, I get it now. I see the correlations, you know. But as I started to learn more, appreciate other photographers' work more and more and more, because it's like you want to know where you stand, you know, in the industry and stuff, so... You know, there's people that I look up to that are, I consider my peers, but are far light years ahead of me as far as, you know, work is concerned. Like Mannion, I think he's amazing. We do different shit, but, you know, he's like the greatest hip hop photographer there is right now. I think he's the best at what he does, you know, so.
Yeah, I had a chance to interview him.
Yeah, I saw that. I looked through your list of the podcast and saw that you interviewed him.
But so he learned heavily from Richard Avedon.
Uh-huh. Yep, I know that.
But you kind of strike me as hip-hop's Gordon Parks.
I've heard that before.
Because you mentioned you bounced around from, you lived in Philly for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you move to New York City? And what inspired you to make that move to New York City?
I moved to New York. Well, I went to Stony Brook, which is in Long Island. So that's about an hour and some change away by Long Island Railroad. That was in 99. But before that, I was living in the Bronx for about 4 months in 96, I think. Yeah, 96.
Okay.
But I just wanted to live here, man. I wanted the excitement of the city. The growing up in Syracuse, New York, it was all about New York, New York, New York, New York. Anytime you meet somebody from New York, it was like, oh, shit, you're from New York? Man, I want to go there, you know? It's like every fucking entertainer, everything happened in New York. Every rapper that I admired, from Jay-Z to Buckshot to Mobb Deep and Nas and Big Daddy Kane and Biz Markie, like everything, my universe, that, you know, as far as like, everything that I loved was New York. So it was like, I want to be in New York.
And where'd you move?
I got to get there. Well, after college, I lived in Brooklyn for a little while.
Where in Brooklyn?
Bushwick, actually. Halsey Street. And then after that, I was like, fuck. New York's expensive. I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? I can't afford an apartment right now. This is after college and everything. So... my cousin and I, we found an apartment in Jersey City. In Jersey City, it was up and coming. And I was like, fuck, this is so close. The train runs 24 hours or blah. I'm just going to stay here. And I laid my roots down in Jersey City. And I've been living in the same apartment since 2004.
What? Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Jersey City is really cool.
Yeah.
Are you like near like the Grove stop?
Yeah. I get up at Grove Street.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I first came to New York City, I stayed in... I stayed there, like right next to the Hollywood Fried Chicken.
Oh shit! Okay.
And it was like it was back in the day though. It wasn't as like
yeah.
It wasn't as nice when I came 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. They had like the McDonald's that had like the sliding door.
Oh, it's still there.
Yeah. I was like, wait, you can't come in?
Right.
Like, nah, no, we just give it to you right here.
It's still there. Yeah.
It was like a liquor store.
Yeah. Right.
Liquor store energy at the McDonald's.
Right. Right.
Oh, at what point in your career did you realize, you know, that things were moving and gaining momentum? Was there like a moment that happened for you?
Yeah. When I was at Santos and I got to the DJ booth, I tapped Diddy on the shoulder and he didn't grab me, but he looked at me and he was like, "Get the fuck out of here," and handed me to his security. And I got on Twitter, and maybe Twitter was maybe like a year old or some shit. And I started to make a joke about the incident in Questlove.
Wait, did he kick you out?
Yeah, he kicked me out. Not out of Santos. He just kicked me out of DJ booth. It was him in DJ booth, Q-Tip, Vashti, Jay-Z.
Okay, you got strong-armed.
Yeah. I had to get past two security guards to get to that point. And I just Diddy turned around. I just showed him my camera. And he's like, it's like, get out of here. So anyway, I get on Twitter and I start making fun of the situation. And Questlove saw it. And then he retweeted Diddy and they're going back and forth. And I'm on the dance floor at Santos. And I'm like, oh shit, okay. This is cool. And, and the night was whatever. I didn't take offense to it. It was, you know, not a big deal to me. I wake up the next day. I believe that might have been Friday. Saturday, Questlove calls me. I tell him what happened. He's like, "Oh, man, I knew Diddy didn't want to seem like the bad guy. He wants to know if he can have your phone number. He wants to give you a call and apologize." I was like, "What? Diddy wants to call me?
Damn." I'm
like, "Puff Daddy? That Diddy?" So, like, shit, Monday or Tuesday, gives me a call. "Yo, Playboy, what up? This is Diddy." And I'm like, "I know it's Diddy." "I know it's you. I muted my TV and I've been waiting for you to call." I didn't say that, but in my head, and I sat down and I was like, "What's up, man? How's it going, buddy?" So I got in front. I was a little nervous talking to him. Played it super cool. And I told him, I was like, "Yo, man, take a look at my website." And he's like, "What's your website?" I said, villageslum.com. And he said, "Somebody go to villageslum.com," pulls it up, I guess, and wherever he was. And he's like, "Oh, man, I like your work." And I was like, "Yeah, I would love to work with you. Can we do something?" He's like, "Listen, I'm going to have somebody hit you up in a couple of days." I said, "Diddy, don't fuck with me." This is my exact words. I was like, "Don't fuck with me." He said, "Listen here, Playboy." And I got real close to the phone. I put the phone up mad tight. And I think it was a BlackBerry, too. I put that motherfucker super close. He's like, "Listen here, Playboy. My follow through is impeccable." And I said, "Word." And then he's like, "Don't worry, somebody's gonna hit you up." And then I got an email saying, "Can you show up at such and such studios?" I forget, not studio, record label. I forget which one it was. And I went, and the job was taking photos at one of his video shoots or some shit. And at that time, it was something that I necessarily really wasn't interested in. And I passed on it. But then, like a month later,
you passed on that opportunity?
Yeah.
Really?
I really wasn't interested in doing it.
Were you scared at all of like losing the opportunity or connection in general?
No, I wasn't.
Why?
Because opportunity to come again. Because I looked at myself as, shit, you want to beat it, man? Act like the fucking man. You know what I mean? So I wasn't cocky about it or anything. It was just like, no, I don't want to do that. And I've always held myself to that standard from day one. I'm not going to do nothing or anything that I don't want to do. You know, that, and it was a good opportunity, but it just didn't fit my brain or what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it didn't sound like it would be fun for me. And at this time, I had a day job and everything. It wasn't like I was hurting for money or anything like that. So, you know, it wasn't something that I had to do for money either. But it was just like, for me, it was so exciting that I had the opportunity. And it's like, well, if I'm getting this opportunity, I'm going to get much bigger and better opportunities. It's going to keep coming. Like, I've reached this point. I'm happy. So A month later or whatever, I go about my life. I'm still shooting, whatever. And I get an email. It says, Mr. Combs requests your presence for his white gala in Beverly Hills. Can you please tell us your rates and da-da-da? Basically, long story short, he wanted me to be his personal photographer for his white party. I believe it was the last one that was in 2009. And I said, motherfucking right. Now we're talking.
Now I'm interested. Now, this sounds fun.
Now, right. Now we're talking. This is what I want to be paid. And flew me out to fucking Beverly Hills, put me up in a hotel. And we're in goddamn hills and houses that I never imagined seeing in my life. His lifestyles are rich and famous. And every goddamn celebrity in the world was there. And I'm just like, wow. Okay. My dumb ass, I was like, do I have to wear white too? And it's like, yeah, motherfucker. So I had to run out and get white and all this shit. And yeah, it was amazing. Like, I was taking photos at the time. Like, a lot of people, like, there were a lot of Hollywood actresses and actors. And so I didn't even know who the fuck they were. And my girlfriend at the time, when I got back to the hotel, we're looking through this shit. And I was like, oh, who's this? She's like, oh my God, that's so and so. So I was like, oh, okay. I wish I would have, you know, known. But I just, you know, I didn't have time to fucking really know who. I didn't know who the fuck everybody was going to be there anyway. But it was an amazing experience. One of the best things I did early in my career. And I remember just publishing those photos. They went fucking crazy on the gossip blogs and all that stuff. And that propelled me into, you know, a different realm of, you know, photography in a different world. Like, a lot of people started to know my name outside of, you know, my circle of friends and the downtown scene. I became more of, you know, more in the hip hop community.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now that you are at a certain place in your career, mm-hmm. you come a long ways from that white party. Right. How do you remain a fly on the wall when I know your face,
mm-hmm.
And you're a photographer, and I know your face. Mm-hmm. How do you still maintain that like anonymity now today?
Shit.
Does that present a challenge?
No, I never really think about it, to be honest. No, it's I don't know. I never think about it. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think it's a challenge. I just think it's, I don't even know if I want to be a fly on the wall anymore. Like, it's more of, like, I guess sometimes being known is better, especially now. It's been 15 years. So it's like, I want the up and coming rappers or, you know, music people, I want them to know who I am. I don't want them to just not know.
Okay.
You know, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I want them to know what's up. And even the rappers that are not up and coming, I want them to be like, okay, yeah, I've seen you before.
Well, I feel like even the reason why I would ask that question mm-hmm. is because to my friends, mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, I'm going out to this event. But this event, to them, is a party.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? To a certain extent.
Right.
So, you know, where they can just get fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, I'm not going to go get fucked up at this mm-hmm. event. Like, I have to be presentable to right. whoever I could potentially meet. But if I see you shooting,
mm-hmm.
I feel like you can miss a moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to interrupt a potential moment that you...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
you could have.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I don't mind. Interrupt, talk. You know what I mean? Shit. Like, for me, it's like, if I'm at an event, I'm using the event to one. Nowadays, I'm already, because if I'm taking photos of the event, I'm fucking getting paid at this point in my career. I'm not shooting any events for free. Those days is long gone. And also, I'm using the event to network. You know, to give out my card, to meet people, that I don't know, you know, to meet the new movers and shakers. There's always new people coming in the city every fucking week. You know, somebody's new and somebody has a new and creative idea, somebody, you know, their dream and so on and so forth. I might want to be a part of their dream, you know, and help them accomplish their goals. But yeah, that's what I've always had, that remedy where it was like, I always used events to propel myself, you know, use as a platform, not just to party, but, you know, not just to be the photographer, but to do other things.
Before, when you got the big opportunity with Diddy to do the white party, times were a lot different where there wasn't Instagram.
No. Just Twitter and Facebook.
How was Instagram changed, if at all, how you do your work?
Instagram, let's see, Instagram changed. Like, I took Instagram as a joke at first. When it first came out, it was just like, oh, I'm just posting stupid shit and whatever. And then I started to see how everyone was transitioning, using it as a business platform, as a tool to really make money in. So I stopped all of that shit because I was on the, remember, I was like, what, people just fucking go to my website.
right.
Just go to my website. You want to see my photos? I'm just using this to post fucking picture of my fucking toes today. Or, you know, or the sun, you know, it's just shitty with this shitty ass fucking filter on it. Like, I didn't use it seriously. And then something's just like, man, you have all these photographers out here that's killing it on Instagram, and I wouldn't even necessarily call some of these people photographers, and this is the beginning of Instagram, where they had fucking thousands of followers, and I was like, hold the fuck on.
Like, freeze, hold on.
Yeah, I was like, hold on. Let me get my shit together on this platform, because I felt that I should have thousands of followers. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, what the fuck? So, I mean, it was around 2012 where I started to really take it serious and really get it together and not have, you know, stupid ass shit on there. What the fuck was your question? Because I totally forgot it.
How has Instagram changed the way you do your job?
Oh, yeah. How does it change the way I do my job?
If at all.
It does. It changed the way that, for one, I don't shoot naked women anymore so much. And I noticed when I didn't take Instagram, because I've been kicked off of Instagram for posting nudity and shit like that.
Wait, like your profile?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I didn't take it serious. I was like, fuck it, I'm posting titties. And I would get notifications and I didn't think they're really going to kick me off. And I had @MelDCole and they said, all right, we've had enough of your shit. See ya. And then I had to have @MelDCole. And I had fucking like 8,000 followers. And this was maybe like the first year I was on it. And then they deleted me at like 8,000 or some shit. I had to restart all over again. I had @MelDCole_VillageSlum. And I said, all right, no more titties. Damn. That sucked. But I was like, you know what? I ain't making money off these titties anyway. You know, I'm not a titty photographer guy. It was just something to do on the side and just fun. And it was 3 or 4 or 5 years of my life. Okay, great. I have that, you know, part done. I can do a book on titties and women if I wanted to. But it's like, you got to really take this shit serious because you can make money off of it. And not just like advertisers and brands, they're not going to want to fuck with you because of the titties and the nudity and all that.
It's how you're branding yourself. You're branding yourself as this.
Yeah.
To someone who doesn't know you.
Yeah. So it's like, I've been turned down for jobs. Like, they're like, oh, they love you. Oh, we're going to put you in for this. And then, like, don't sign this shit. And the brand comes back. They vet your Instagram. And they're like, yeah, you might be a little bit too wild for them or whatever. And it's like, fuck.
That was a ban right there.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it definitely changes you, you know, and it's your portfolio. For me, it's what people are going to look at first because it's the most, you know, constant thing that you're updating.
Obviously, your work speaks for itself.
Thank you.
You're an amazing photographer.
Appreciate it.
What else besides the actual art itself makes you great and makes you hireable and makes you someone that everyone else wants to be around?
I think at this point in my life and stage in my career, and what's always been a calling card for me is that I can be a chameleon. I am a chameleon. And what I mean by that is that I know how to read a room. You know, if I'm getting hired for some punk rock shit, I know what I can do and what I can't do. I'm fucking going there and wild out. I'm being a pit. I'm going to do all this shit. I can drink and have fun. But also, if I get hired for some corporate ass shit, I'm not going to come with the same mindset and going there. I'm not going to go fucking with holy jeans on and wilding out. You know, I'm not going to be myself, but I'm just going to adjust because I know that this is not what this scene is. So that's part of it. And being what I like to call is being fucking professional. That's what it's called. Professionalism. And being able to adapt, being able to do different types of photographies, Jesus Christ, photography. And, you know, I can do event shit. I can do lifestyle. I can do live music. You know, I can do portraits, blah, blah, blah. I could do a lot of different shit. So it makes me, I guess, hireable. And then also, just being, I guess, a personality per se, whatever. Like the fact that you know me as, you know my face as a photographer, I'm doing something right, you know? And people like that shit. They like, the influencer part of, photographers these days, to help them sell shit or talk about their stupid shit. A lot of stupid shit that I turned down, but thank you, stupid people, for sending me your stupid proposals. but no thank you. I'm not holding your fucking water bottle at a festival that you're not paying me to get to. Suck a dick.
One of my favorite photos from you, the Drake Sade photo. How did that happen? I'll just hear that story.
One of my holy grail photos was to get Sade. Oh, excuse me, just one second. This shit, my cuff keeps hitting this thing. All right, we're back. So one of my holy grail photos was Sade. So on this particular trip, and I'm with Trey Songz, and we're out promoting his album Tremaine. So this was last year, 2017. We're out in London promoting it, and what the fucking album was like? More Life, I believe it's called. Mm-hmm. That just came out. So we're all listening to that. We're vibing off it. You know, Trey and Drake have a relationship and they just rekindled it. And so they're all texting and shit. And I was like, I'm looking at shit to do. And I was like, oh shit, Drake's performing at O2 Arena. I was like, in the back of my head, I'm like, I hope we go. And I want to take photos. This would be fucking awesome. And so we're going. And it's just him, me, Kevin Lyles, and Bianca, who works with Trey as well, and me. So, and then it was Tip and Dot, his assistants. And that's usually the crew that goes, to private stuff like that with him or whatever and takes care of his shit. And, man, we get there, and then all of a sudden, Trey just, real low, he says, Sade is here. And everyone looked at him like, get the fuck out of here. She ain't here. She's a hermit. She don't come outside, man. You just bullshitting us. So he's like, nah, she's here. Y'all, I saw her. There's a door opened up in the corner of it. And he said, I saw her fucking face. And I was like, yo. He's like, we're going to find her right now. And we found her in the sound booth later on, because Trey was coming. He was going to get on stage with Drake and possibly do a few songs. He only did one song. So we find Sade, and I'm nervous as fuck. I'm like, yo, it's Sade right fucking here in front of me. While Drake is fucking performing, she's singing Drake songs, and then Trey.
Yeah, so she in the crowd?
No, she's almost in the crowd. It's the platform. You walk up some stairs, and it's her, and the crowd was literally like right here. And it was like this sound booth area. So it was her, Drake's dad.
Sade's with Drake's dad?
Kinda, sorta. Yeah.
Yo, Drake's, Dennis is living, son.
Drake's uncle. This white guy. Who else was in there? The model that has the what's the skin condition?
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Yeah, she's super. I
can't think of her name.
I can't think of her name off the top of my head right now.
Vitiligo.
Yeah, vitiligo. That's what you call it. But she was there, and a couple other people. And I remember telling Trey, I said, "Listen, bro, we getting this photo with Sade. I said, if you gotta throw me under the bus." And tell me, like, give me a stern no, because he never does that, whatever. Usually, him and I have this relationship. I know how to read him or whatever when the situation is right. That's another thing, you know, what makes a good photographer, especially personal photographer. You have to know your fucking client. But I told him, I said, we're getting this. And if I go, bro, let's take a photo, you have to tell me no, because you feel the vibe from her. Just do it. I don't care. Yeah, so it's fine. I'm not gonna, you know, feel any ill will about it. I won't take it personal. He's like, bet, don't worry about it. So they start talking, and I just start filming video. I got video of them talking and all that shit. And then I was like, fuck, how am I gonna get this photo though? Like, I'm trying to read the situation, and the woman with the vitiligo.
Yeah, vitiligo.
Yeah, that. She comes over, and I was like, fuck, yes. It's a woman. Sade's going to feel comfortable with her, possibly. So I go, get you guys together. And Sade says, okay. But Sade does one of these. Everybody's looking this way and goes like this. And I was like, I didn't give a shit. It's Sade in photo.
Oh, she turns her head?
Yeah. But not on some, like, fuck you kind of shit. Right. It was just like, I'm Sade. Like, I'm going to pose this way. Fucking fine to me. So, and it was... I got a photo of them three and then Drake's uncle. And then Trey had to go perform. So we go perform, I shoot it. And I'm thinking, this is the end of it. I got my photo of Sade, I'm fucking happy. So show's over. We go backstage. So Drake has like his backstage. Then there's a after party. But then there's an after party. You have to get through... You know, there's like
layers.
Yes, layers where he has his dressing room. There's a desk in there. There's phones set up for Drake. And all this shit. Drake has his own fucking tiles with his logo on it. Like,
wow.
Right.
He's A-list.
Oh, yeah. A-list. So we get back there and Sade's back there. Right when we walk in, it's fucking Sade and Drake. And I literally.
Just them two?
No, it was probably like 10, 15 other people in there. You know, Drake's mom, Drake's dad, Drake's uncle, Drake's team were in there. And then it was us. And I walk into Drake and Sade, and they're posing for a photo. And I literally walked up, and I took the photo too. No, I didn't ask any fucking questions. I didn't say shit. I took the fucking photos. I snap. And then I went over with Trey. And then in the back of the room, fucking Sade came back there and was talking with Trey and all this shit. And it was like, we got to get solo photos. So everybody in the fucking team got solo photos. I got my photo taken with Sade. It was magical. She was so fucking cool that imagine this, right? And this is us. And imagine this is a palm tree, a little one. It's about yay high up to your waist or whatever. And at one point, we're all dancing around this fucking palm tree with Sade. And Drake is playing the fucking music over in the corner.
Oh, my God. What does her voice sound like? Like, not her speaking voice.
Dude.
I've never even heard her speaking voice.
I said, hi. And she just, she says, she goes, I can't even do it. It was like, hi, I'm Sade. And I literally said, I said, could you say that one more time?
I've never heard her say her name.
Could you say that one more time, please? She said, I'm Sade. I was like, I know. Like, she just laughed at me. I was like, yo, you are. Yeah, you are fucking the shit. Like, God damn it, Sade, dude. Like, what the fuck? Unbelievable. So, I mean, that night was, dude, we must have talked about that night for another month, like reliving every situation. We walked out of the O2 arena like, what the fuck just happened? BB, she somehow, her and Sade started talking about sneakers. She takes off her sneaker and gives it to fucking Sade. Sade had her feet in fucking BB's sneaker. And she's like, oh, it's some Nikes. Jordan, I think Jordan 1s. She's like, I like these. Fucking Sade gives her her address. BB sends her fucking sneakers. Like, crazy shit like that happened. Where wow. The energy was just crazy. And then I remember Sade was leaving. They were and I went like this, about to go up to Drake and Sade. And Drake goes like this. He was like, No, like, and then she leaves, and then Drake comes over to me. It's like, yo, man, I'm sorry. You know, she just kind of wanted to leave. You know, maybe she didn't want any more photos. Don't take any offense. I looked at Drake and I said, nigga, Nick, stop it. I looked at him just like that. I said, stop it. You're too nice. It's like, you are the reason why I just met Sade. If she came to your show, it's okay, man. Like, you don't have, like, but thank you for being so polite to me. I really, really, really appreciate it. Because you probably don't know me from a can of paint right now. Thank you very much. And wow. It was me. It was at this point, it was him, me, and some other guy. And this other guy asked me to take a photo of Drake and him. It was just us in this dressing room. And I go, fuck it. I was like, let me get a photo too, Drake. And I pose with him. I was like, fuck, I'm like, I was like, I gotta remember this fucking night. And I was like, I gave him five dap and I said, thank you. And left. And it's just like that.
Yeah, because that was a photo that just, well, the first time when it popped up on mine, was like, wow.
Yeah, man, that, like, photo made the rounds. He wound up posting, he posted his photographer's photo of, I believe it was him, his mom, and her. And then he posted my photo of just them two together, the black and white one that he posted together. And I was just like, man, wow. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Before I let you go, there's two questions I want to ask before you wrap up the interview. And I have to touch on it because you brought it up in the during the story.
Okay.
Was reading the client and, like, reading the moment.
Yes.
Like, explain more about that to photographers, about that ability and that skill.
Yeah, so, I mean, I always tell people, you have to read the room. You cannot walk in thinking that every room is the same, especially if you want to deal with different people, you want to branch out from what you normally do. It's just like you gain a lot of experience from that, from going to dinner. For me, I gain a lot of experience from going to dinner parties. Like, you just never know who the fuck is going to be there. It's going to be some crazy motherfuckers and everybody's acting crazy. It could be some tighten up people. You know, it's kind of, you know, you just got to know, because I've done work with fucking the most buttoned up people there is. Like, and I've done work for the craziest motherfuckers there are. I've done work for the in-between. I've done work for Republicans. I've done work for people that work for Fox News. Shepard Smith, that's my homie. He's the only guy on Fox News that,
that you fucks with.
That I fuck with. Because he, you know, he be telling it like it is. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Trump, you're fucking doing some stupid shit. You're doing some fucking idiot shit. Kanye, you too, man. What the fuck?
Today was an interesting day.
Yeah.
We'll go into that.
Yeah. But anyway, back to reading it. I would love to have read that fucking room.
Yes.
Jeez, man. But it's just a skill, man. You just really have to know when to press the button and when not to press the button. The button, I mean, the shutter. You really have to know. Like, every fucking moment is not a moment to be captured. Even if you think that it is, some moments you just have to step back and just accept it for what it is and not capture it. And that's how I've lived my life as a photographer all the way. It's like you have to just show respect to what's going on, you know?
Right, because I let's say, for instance, with Trey, right? He hires you to be his personal photographer. Right. So you don't have the clearance to just shoot away because you're there.
Technically, I do. I shoot whatever the fuck I want to shoot with him. But we've built up a relationship where I just know when it's time to fucking put the camera down.
Okay. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, it's a rhythm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally a rhythm. We get, like, say for instance, we have a show. I shoot everything at the fucking show. After party, everything at the after party or, you know, at the club. But if we get back to the hotel room and it's private time and there's really nothing to fucking shoot or whatever and it's done, it's time to put the camera down and chill out and just chill. Okay. You know, talk, drink. Have a smoke, you know what I mean? Like, relax or take my ass to bed, you know? So, right, it's exactly what you said. It's a rhythm, you know, with him. And it's one that it was like very immediate from the moment that I met him. It just became very fluid. It was just open, like, yo, shoot. Yeah, I'll tell you if I don't want to shoot and you'll learn. He didn't, you know, it's easy. Easy, and that's why I'm still working with him 3 years later. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And Mel, lastly, I ask this question to every guest on the show. What have you sacrificed in your life to be great?
Many relationships. Many, many, many girlfriends. Shit. Many late nights. Many just not sleeping, not eating right, just hustling. I've sacrificed... shit, not being close to my family. They live in Syracuse. I've sacrificed being behind on student loans, being behind fucking just everything, man. Fucking up with the IRS and a lot of shit, you name it, I've done it. Because after I quit my job, I thought that I was going to be the greatest photographer in the world. I thought I was going to make, you know, a lot of money. And it just didn't happen as quickly as I thought it was going to be. So then... you know, you should have sacrificed just as like, fuck it. Well, I guess that I can't pay the fucking IRS back this month. And then next thing you know, it turns into a year or two and you're trying to be this great artist and photographer. And you're like, fuck, I got this IRS bill that I need to take care of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or I got real life shit that is not going to stop just because I want to be this famous photographer. You know, and the same shit with just bills in general, all of that shit, man. Just sacrificing a lot, a whole lot, like shit. Not eating right was a big thing. Going back to ramen noodles after having a day job for so many years, and it's like, fuck, I'm back on this college shit.
Yeah,
again. Man, so much, so much. I remember I had a gig and my dog was sick and. She had cancer and I had to fucking leave. And that was a big sacrifice, you know, to come back. And I knew she was only going to get worse, but I had to go. I had no choice. I had to fucking work, you know, and it's something that I signed up for, you know, months and months ago. And, but I think the big thing, man, is just relationships. The people that necessarily didn't understand what I was trying to sacrifice to get there. And I wasn't trying to take them along on the ride with me because I didn't think they deserved to be there. You know, asking too many questions, wondering why they can't come. It's like, nah, man, you can't. Shit, I got
like, fam.
I'm getting.
Can I come
in.
To your job?
Right. I'm doing me. I can't get you in too. And if you acting like this, I gotta fucking babysit you at the party, at the event. Nah, bro. Like, shit, we out of here. The same thing with women. Like, why can't I go? I'm fucking working. I'm out till 4 o'clock in the morning, and I got to wake up at fucking 10 o'clock in the morning to go to my real job. Hmm. Yeah, not necessarily real, but then it was my real job, you know? So, yeah, it's just sacrifice. I remember, literally, I'll wrap it up here. When I quit my job, it was, shit, I forget what year it was, but I quit, and I literally... it's the summer, and I think I got a big gig right before I quit, so I thought it was on the up and up, and I got one or two gigs that summer, and it was just, like to the point where it's like, fuck. And am I growing ass? Am I going to have to ask my dad for rent money? Like, what the fuck? And I wind up getting another job at the end of the summer, like a desk job.
Yeah.
That worked with it. It was no dress code. It was from 12 to 8 p.m. And it was like one of the best things that happened to me. I was able to still go out at night, but I could sleep in a little longer. It's the best. And I held that for 3 years until I reorganized myself personally and business-wise and came back stronger. And I was like, the next time I quit, I'm going to fucking not just do it so viciously to myself. You know what I'm saying? Just because I hate every fucking body here and I hate the way my fucking cubicle neighbor laughs and all that shit. It's like, I have to be for real about it.
Have a softer landing.
Yeah, yeah. And luck. And it's like, I built shit up. And to the point where everybody at the job was like, why are you here? And I was like, shit, well, this is easy. I ain't really doing shit. And and they all left at 5 o'clock. I was at 8. And it's like from 5 to 8, I'm doing my own shit. I'm editing at y'all shit. You know? And so it's just patience, man. Patience.
Mel, thank you so much for being here, man. I appreciate you.
Yes.
And for just producing amazing work, man.
Thank you very much.
Like, you're that dude.
I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it.
Later, bro.
Later.
Thank you so much to our special guest, Mel D. Cole, for stopping by the podcast today. This episode has been mixed by Mark Bird. Before we get out of here, be sure to check out my other podcast, OPP. Other People's Podcast highlights your favorite podcasters, and we talk about the dope shows they created. I'll have the link provided for you in the description. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge, signing off. Till next time.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.